It's Twin Bills, the Red Sox podcast from the sports department of the Providence Journal, featuring Red Sox beat writer Bill Koch, along with sports editor Bill Corey. Now, Twin Bills.
Hello and welcome to the 2019 season finale, the Twin Bills Red Sox podcast. Bill, it has come to this. It's a rainy Wednesday afternoon in Providence, and we are finally putting the bow on a very disappointing Red Sox season. This is Bill Corey, the sports editor of the Providence Journal. With me is our Red Sox beat writer, Bill Koch. And Bill, $242 million doesn't buy you what it used to, I guess.
No, Bill Corey, I would like to congratulate you, actually. You've been calling for the moratorium, the eulogy, the death edition of the podcast for about two solid months now.
Well, I was hoping I would be wrong, but...
You were ahead of the curve, my friend.
Well,
you were.
The Red Sox won 84 games, lost 78, finished outside of the playoffs. And we are here to talk about that and to see what they do moving forward. So first off, Bill, I guess we should just touch on what the heck happened with this team. And it really comes down to just their pitching overall.
Yeah, they just didn't pitch at all. And that was the entire season. You know, you look at what happened with them in terms of the starting rotation. What you thought were going to be your top three starters all spent extended time in the injured list. Chris Sale, David Price, Nathan Eovaldi. You were 58-70 in games that Eduardo Rodriguez did not pitch.
Jeez.
So that should let you know just how ineffective everybody else was.
Right.
You know, your starting rotation this year had a 4.95 earned run average. Last year it was 3.77. So you were worse by more than a run. Your bullpen blew 28 saves. Only three teams blew more. Oddly enough, two of them are involved in the playoffs, the Athletics and the Nationals. But their ERA was 4.40. That was up from 3.72 last year. So just a collective failure of the pitching staff, and I think it had a snowball effect onto the rest of the roster. You know, as Alex Cora said, it felt like a lot of times this year we'd look up and it would be 3 or 4 nothing in the first inning or the second inning. You know, you're pressing on offense, you're trying to come back in every single game, and you know, they were very inconsistent in that way. You know, they also lack some sharpness in the field, whether it be defensively or in key at bats. I think they finished the year with only two more hits than strikeouts with the bases loaded. Last year they were excellent in those situations. You know, so it was just the little things. They weren't anywhere near as buttoned up as they were last year, and I think that the fact that they finished six games over 500 is a testament to maybe a handful of superb performances that they got. As a group, though, this was certainly a disappointment.
Well, we will definitely definitely touch on some of those superb performances, because they definitely did have some guys who had some very good years. But, you know, my take on this season, Bill, was is like they really never got out of second gear. You know, they started slow, and I understand that part of that was by design, that they wanted to take it easy in spring training because of the long postseason. But, you know, the Dodgers had just as long a postseason, and they're playing here in October. but the Red Sox just kind of took it easy, and they had that tough opening road trip out west, and they just never were really able to kind of catch up. You know, they dropped a bunch of games early, they fell behind, and they never really put together a sustained long winning streak. And before you know it, they were dealing with pitching injuries and guys coming in and out of the rotation. And, you know, you're right. In some ways, it's sort of surprising they were even able to win 84 games. But, boy, what a disappointment after winning the World Series a season ago. They still have the highest payroll in baseball. And when you're a Boston fan, and not just a Red Sox fan, I think, when you're a Boston fan, you know, you're not in it for the sort of feel good, oh, you know, moral victory, we tried hard kind of thing, because there's just been too much success in Boston. You know, we're all spoiled.
Right.
You know, it's not like, oh, well, we had a winning season. We don't care. We want you to get to the playoffs, and we want you to go deep, and ultimately we want you to win.
I think I saw a tweet the other night that it had been nearly 4 years, four calendar years, since one of the Boston teams had not reached the postseason. Which is just unbelievable to think about.
Wow.
Unbelievable to think about that they had qualified straight through.
Yeah.
the Celtics, the Bruins, the Red Sox, the Patriots. Straight through for almost four calendar years.
So every team reached the postseason.
Every team reached the postseason in order. The Red Sox broke that streak.
And, wow.
You know, you
alluded, and you wouldn't have picked the Red Sox to break the streak at the beginning of the season,
certainly
right?
Certainly not.
You might have picked the Celtics.
Certainly not. A lot of the talk at the start of the year was that the Red Sox were going to repeat.
Yep.
They ended up with the highest payroll in baseball, $242 million. And they brought back so many pieces from last season.
Well, that's the other thing,
juggernaut.
Too. Right. I mean, you brought back the team. This wasn't the 97 Marlins where you win it and then you break up and sell off all the pieces. Everybody came back except, obviously, Craig Kimbrell. You didn't have a closer. But for the most part, the team was the same team. But, boy, the pitching just went south, and it never really could right itself.
Yeah, it was really poor, you know. But you look at health is the great equalizer.
Right.
These guys break down. They get hurt. They all end up in the IL, as I said, you know, and it's really difficult when you're spending what you're spending on Price, Sale, and Eovaldi. The next 3 years, it's going to be $73.6 million combined. You don't really have a lot of alternatives, and especially when you don't want to go through that third threshold of the competitive balance tax, which we're going to talk a lot about on this podcast, obviously. Mm-hmm. It really hamstrings you in terms of your roster flexibility. The other thing that you alluded to, I think it's an excellent point, the way that they started, you're 11-17 at one point. You play 48-30.
Yep.
Your next 78 games, you get to 59-47. You're 12 games over 500, which was ultimately the best that they ended up being.
That was their peak.
At any point this year. But it just felt like you would run uphill for 3 months just to get to that point. And then you go into the trade deadline. You don't make any real meaningful acquisitions. Andrew Cashner doesn't give you anything near what you hoped he might.
Right.
You lose 8 games in a row to the Rays and the Yankees. And you know, I thought Alex Cora made a really good observation the other day about that. He said not only were we losing ground in the division, but we were losing ground in the wild card at the same time.
It's true.
On Tampa.
Yep.
So we were doubly disappointed by that stretch of baseball. And really put them behind the eight ball going in the last 2 months, and they could just never recover. And, you know, what you see now going into this offseason is, you know, one of very much of uncertainty. Dave Dombrowski has been fired, obviously. You have four people currently running the team in an interim fashion. It's a really important hire for Sam Kennedy, John Henry, and Tom Werner to make, and whoever they bring in is going to have some serious decision.
Absolutely, and we should talk about that, and we will in a minute here. But before we move off the current year's team, we should at least give some props to a few of the players who did have very good years.
No question.
And two of them right at the top of that list. First is the shortstop, Xander Bogaerts, who at the very beginning of the season got a contract extension with the team and has not disappointed. I'm looking at his final numbers here. Ended up batting .309, had 117 RBIs, 33 home runs, played a very solid shortstop. it's hard to celebrate when you don't make the playoffs and you're coming off a World Series and you have this kind of disappointing season, but his season was especially just fantastic to watch.
30 home runs and 50 doubles, which is iconic for a shortstop.
Yep.
They're numbers that don't happen. The amount that he matured off the field, the way that he sort of took the reins of the clubhouse, served pretty much as the de facto captain.
Yep.
Among the position players. And, with a lot of the pitchers hurt, whether it be Sale or Price, two guys, two veteran voices in that clubhouse usually who weren't around, who were either rehabbing or not on the road trips or whatever else. A lot of nights it fell to Bogaerts to speak for the team. And you would never know that he's just a 26-year-old guy who just turned 27 a couple days ago. Actually, I think it might have been yesterday.
Mm.
You would never know that, it was just that he was that young. He doesn't present that way.
He's a very young veteran. It seems like he's been around. You've heard that name for many years now.
And he knows how to handle himself in a market like Boston, which is no small thing.
Sure.
You've seen a lot of guys come here, get a big contract, and then struggle. Maybe feel like they have to press, like they have to live up to it. He just was who he was all season. And what he is one of the great young players in baseball.
Yeah, and if you're a Red Sox fan, you have to be excited by the fact that he's going to be around for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Right on his heels is Rafael Devers, who at age 22, also had a phenomenal season. .311 batting average, 115 RBIs, 32 home runs, looking more comfortable at third base. You know, the knock on him was he wasn't, you know, he could botch some of the routine plays. Mm-hmm. He seemed to improve on that this season. And hopefully he will be, you know, a Red Sox fixture, unless you need to trade him for somebody, a Red Sox fixture for a long time. So Devers also a great season.
You know, another guy who did historic things this year for somebody before they turned 23, 90 extra base hits this season, which was the only other two players who have done that before turning 23 in a single season are Joe DiMaggio and Alex Rodriguez.
Wow.
It's pretty good company.
Yeah.
I think that the transition for Devers this year is he went from a very talented kid to a very talented professional. Hmm. And I think you could see that from the start of the offseason when he hired a nutritionist. He lost some weight. He was in much better shape coming into spring training in Fort Myers. Mm-hmm. It was obvious that he had dedicated himself physically to the game. Right. Then in May, you have a series in Chicago where he makes a critical error against the White Sox that helps cost them a game and a walk-off home run in the ninth inning. The next day, he's out there early taking ground balls, and he continued to do that over the course of the year, working with Carlos Fabelis and Ramon Vasquez, turned himself into, if not an average defender, maybe an above-average defender, you know, somebody who you could see sticking at third base. There's no more questions about whether or not we should move him to first, yep, or DH him or whatever it may be. So I think that his transition into being a true pro is probably the best thing that I saw from Devers this year, aside from the numbers and the fact that he was sensational at the plate and, you know, the enthusiasm that he plays the game with. You know, it's almost childlike, the way,
yeah,
you know, he smiles out there and interacts with his teammates and is basically their little brother. But I thought he grew up a lot this season, mm-hmm, and I thought he showed us the type of player that he could be going forward.
Definitely. A great development all season long. And a couple of other names we probably should mention. One is Christian Vasquez, who had a great season.
Yeah.
Catcher, 72 RBIs, hit .276, 23 home runs.
Only had 10 career homers coming into this year.
Yeah, he doubled his career output in one season.
New career highs in doubles and RBI and slugging and, yep, walks. He looked like a guy who, you know, who they always hoped he could be, that sort of franchise catcher.
And obviously J.D. Martinez had another solid year, hit over .300, more than 100 RBIs, 36 home runs. And Mookie Betts, who certainly did not have the kind of year that won him the MVP a season ago, but was not a bad year. And you know, if this is the down year, most people would sign up for this, right? .295, yeah, 80 RBIs, 29 home runs, still a great outfielder. Certainly did not hurt the team, but didn't play up to those sort of otherworldly numbers of a year ago.
If the floor is hitting .300 with a .900 OPS, right, 100 runs scored, 40 doubles, and a top 10 position player WAR in baseball, according to Fangraphs, I think he finished eighth. If that's the floor, yeah, then you get an idea how special, right, this guy is.
Absolutely, absolutely. So offensively, and I was just looking at the numbers before we went on here, the Red Sox finished first in the league in hits.
Yep.
I believe, fourth in the league in runs scored.
Mm-hmm.
We're up in the top 10, I think, in home runs as well. So, you know, obviously the problem was not the offense. They were scoring runs, maybe not getting the timely hits that you'd expect them to get. But
there was some of that. There were a few more strikeouts in there than, yeah, they would have liked as,
right,
well.
And numbers can be a little deceiving, but really it was, as we said here off the top, it was really just the pitching, how that side just let it down, let the team down.
That side was plenty good enough to win.
Sure.
Your offense was plenty good enough to win.
Yep. So moving forward a little bit here, and you mentioned the Gang of Four. So I guess my question here, Bill, is how long is the Gang of Four going to be a Gang of Four? Because pretty soon it's going to be a Gang of One. Pretty soon. I mean, that's my take on it. I think they're going to.
Sure.
I think these. I think all the assistants are certainly competent, but I think the Red Sox are going to go and get somebody.
I think John Henry and Tom Werner addressed the media on Friday, and I think, you know, Henry made maybe his displeasure with the hiring process pretty clear, as clear as John Henry can. He's not a public complainer.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily what he does, but he will subtly sort of poke and prod around an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And when he says that, you know, baseball's hiring practices are a bit prohibitive, that you can't talk to candidates really during a season,
right,
that baseball sort of frowns upon candidates making lateral moves. one general manager being hired to be a general manager for another team. Mm-hmm. That's sort of frowned on within the game. When he makes allusions to those things, I think it gives you an idea that they're probably going to have to wait until after the season.
Yeah, he's probably got his eye on one or two people who are active right now, and he can't talk to them.
At the very least, you know, if the candidate isn't on the two World Series teams, you might have to wait until, you know, somewhere deeper into October.
Maybe after the League Championship Series or something.
You know, what he did say was that, you know, they would like to target someone who has previous general manager experience at minimum. So that would disqualify the Gang of Four. You know, and I also think that whoever they bring in is going to have a bit more of a player development background. You know, Dave Dombrowski was the type of guy who would pursue high-dollar free agents, get deals done. He would ram through trades, even if it included, you know, an extra prospect or two. He was out to get his man and was going to be aggressive doing it. I think Henry wants to go back to the Theo Epstein, Ben Cherington, Jed Hoyer sort of player development model here.
Yeah.
I think he realizes that is the easiest way to control costs. Young players are the cheapest. Baseball salary structure is completely unfair. Unfair. From the minor leagues all the way up, it has to be said, you know, someone like Rafael Devers made $617,000 this year. You know, next year he's probably not going to make $1 million, which is just ridiculous.
It's a crime, considering how much everybody else is making.
It's a crime, and he's not going to be a free agent until like 2024 or 25. You know, but with all of that in mind, I have to think that they're going to be looking at, you know, someone within another organization. They did say that they were going to start the search from the outside, and I think it's going to be someone who has done more with limited means. You know, they've stated an intention to try to cut payroll here. They want to get under $208 million, which is the first luxury tax threshold. Next year, they backpedaled very quickly and said it was a goal and not a mandate, but the way they introduced it, it sounded like it was going to be pretty high on the priority list for the next candidate.
It seems so unlikely that they're going to be able to do that. But
I think the biggest
The
biggest issue you have is, you know, you spent almost $3 million a win this year. You know, it ends up being like $2.8 million for every game that you won. And you've got teams like the A's and the Rays and the Twins who didn't spend anything near what you did. And they won a lot more games than you when they were in the playoffs. The idea of the Red Sox, I think, when Henry took over and when Epstein came in, just at their very core, was that you could have a robust player development system while also having the financial advantages, being able to get whatever free agent you want. And as we talked about in the last edition of the podcast, I think that that's what cost Dombrowski his job, the fact that he spent too much of John Henry's money on assets that were going to depreciate.
Yeah.
And I think that along the way, that cost Epstein his job and Cherington his job as well. I think it was the free agent signings more than the player development, and I think that's how we've sort of arrived at where we are now and the profile of the next candidate they want to bring in.
Yeah. And, you know, far be it for me to sit here and defend Dave Dombrowski, but I will in this sense that you knew what you were getting with Dave Dombrowski.
100%.
I mean, this is what the guy, I mean, he's a veteran general manager. This is what he's done pretty much at every stop, and he did it here, and he won you a World Series.
100%.
You know, so in some ways, I think it's a little disingenuous for John Henry to now say, well, that's not the direction we wanted. Well, you know, this is the guy you brought in. This is he did what he always does. You won the title a year ago. You know, your pitching fell through and didn't have luck with health, and so now it's he didn't build up the farm system. Well, I wonder if the pitching held up and they got themselves in the playoffs, you know, then what?
Well, let's add to that. Henry said the other night on Friday that he felt like this was heading toward a divorce shortly after the World Series.
I thought after the World Series he said, made some comment about how he, you know, he wanted to re-sign Dombrowski.
See,
or whatever.
This is the issue we have. At the parade, Henry said that he wanted, one of his priorities going into the offseason was that he wanted to extend Dombrowski. He then said that sort of by the end of November, shortly after when those discussions started, that he realized they were headed toward divorce. Well, what I think happened was, and this is just speculating, this is not you know anything informed, but I can put the timeline and put the dots together. Dombrowski signs Steve Pierce. He signs Nathan Eovaldi. Mm. Henry probably looks at that and thinks, is this really value?
Yeah.
For $74 million for these two players who were supposed to be trade deadline rentals.
Yeah.
Then he signs Chris Sale in March. All three of those guys have terrible seasons. You're at the point in October now, or into September, where Henry says midsummer, we spent all our money, but I also don't believe in lame ducks, whether it be managers or baseball executives or whatever it may be. Here's my roster. It's inflexible. Hmm. What am I going to do going into next offseason? He might have just cost me Mookie Betts. I can't bring him back. I need to fire him. We need to move on. We're going to cut payroll and bring in someone who can bring in some minor leaguers. So I think that this was sort of an evolution over 10, 11 months where the Red Sox, Dombrowski specifically, squandered a lot of the equity that he had built up, and Henry can't fire himself. He's right. The owner. He cuts the checks. Ultimately, it's going to be somebody working for him that takes the fall.
Sure.
Sam Kennedy made the point of saying that, you know, we take responsibility for this, and Tom Werner did the same. That's after the fact, of course.
Right.
You know, how does it look, though? The question would be, how does it look if it leaks out that Henry, coming off 119 wins and winning the World Series, is blocking Dombrowski last November or December from making signings that he wants to make? How would you react to that?
Right, right, yeah.
They would say that they're dysfunctional and that this is ridiculous. And so, really, I look at Henry and I think that he was in a very difficult situation, knowing the GM he had, knowing the team, as great as it was last year, wasn't necessarily his ideal, you know, idea of a team. And so I think it just ended up being an arranged marriage at the start when they brought Dombrowski in 2015. He wasn't generally along the line of the people that they had working for them before.
Right.
And I think it finally just hit the wall here.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, ultimately it is John Henry's team and he writes the checks. And
I agree.
If you know, if he really was opposed to signing Chris
Sale, he should have said something.
Could have said, hey, I'm not on board with this. You
I
know?
Agree.
But anyway, so moving forward here, some of the decisions that either the Gang of Four or whoever the new general manager is going to be are going to have to make is, I think, first and foremost, what do you do about Mookie Betts?
Yeah.
He's heading into his last season with the Red Sox. If he goes to arbitration, he's probably going to get like $30 million or something like that, right?
He's going to push that, yeah.
And so what do you do? Do you cut? Do you cut bait, so to speak, trade him now and try and get some prospects and a major league player or two? Or do you really go in and try and keep him?
Well, as I wrote for the Journal, and you know this, you know, I would keep him. I wouldn't trade him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is...
Well, then you're not getting under the luxury tax threshold if you're keeping him.
I understand that. But I also look at it and I think to myself that you're not too far away if you keep him on this roster.
Yeah.
You're really not. Your pitching staff being what it is, you have to hope that they're healthy. You're locked into those guys. You don't really have a choice.
Right.
But I just look at Betts and I think this guy in any given year, and Xander Bogaerts said it the other day, this guy in any given year could be the MVP.
Yep.
He could be. If he has a great Mookie Betts year, he's the MVP. It's him and Mike Trout and maybe Alex Bregman. They're the only three guys in the American League right now who can reach that level. He's such a great talent, a great player. His teammates like him. He said that he wants to be here. So all of those things, you know, would sort of move me to keep him. Other things to keep in mind. His value being what it is, he's going to get $27, $28 million in arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to put you over the third threshold. It's not going to cost you draft picks. That's what you're really looking to avoid if you're the Red Sox. You go over the first couple. Yes, it's financial. Yes, it's going to hurt John Henry and whatever else. But how are your ratings and your sales going to be if you trade Mookie Betts and the team stinks? It's going to hurt your business side a little bit if you're not quite as good. The other thing I look at is let's go into the actual, you know, thought of trading him.
Mm-hmm.
He's been very public in saying that he is not going to sign with any team. He's going to go to market,
yep.
Which means you're getting a $27, $28 million rental. You're also giving up, whether it be a big league player and a couple prospects or three of your best prospects or whatever it may be, you're giving up a lot for that one-year rental. So there's only a very short list of teams that you'd be able to trade him to in theory. You know, someone who's on the playoff fringes like Cleveland or the Mets or, you know, the Giants or somebody who has intentions on being in the postseason next year, the Diamondbacks, somebody like that. They also have to have a match system-wise. You're probably looking for a young pitcher, a young outfielder, a couple guys who are cost-controlled who can get in the big leagues. I don't know if you're going to get anything close to what you assume is value for him trying to make that kind of trade. So, you know, for all of those reasons and the fact that you get an extra year to try to negotiate with him, which is exclusively yours.
Right.
No other team has it. Even if you don't sign him, you could still get a long way down the road on a deal with his representatives. You're the only one. You're the only ones who can talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
For all those reasons, I would keep him. I understand that people look at it and they say, you can't let him walk away for nothing. The previous minute, all of what I just said is not nothing.
Right.
It's not nothing.
Yeah.
In terms of player costs, yes, if he signs somewhere else, you know, you lose the player. You get a compensatory draft pick. You've baked in $28, $29 million in payroll that you would have to spend.
Sure.
And you get to contend in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not nothing.
Right.
I think that's a very common misconception. I think that's mischaracterized, that if he leaves and doesn't sign with you, that it's nothing. I disagree with that vehemently.
I
don't think it's nothing.
That's a good point. You all of a sudden have all this money to spend, and you do get a compensatory pick. And realistically, if you get prospects, who knows how those prospects would work out.
You don't.
You know, the thing with me and Betts is the Red Sox, to me, should not be one of the teams that when they develop a star, they can't afford to keep him. You know, I think that the Red Sox, you know, and here we are talking about the farm system not being very strong. Well, you know, Betts has been the star of that farm system in the past, you know, what, 8 years,
mm-hmm.
7 years, whenever he came up. And to me, he's the prototypical homegrown talent, reaches stardom, and you keep him because he's done it with you. You come up under your... You know, and realistically, how much less, you know, if you truly are going to go for try and sign Betts, I mean, you know, you're going to have to spend somewhere in the $30 million range or right around there.
More.
Right. Okay.
More than Harper, less than Trout.
Okay. More than Harper, less than Trout.
So 30, 33, 34,
right.
35, somewhere in there a year.
But, you know, he is one of these elite players who there's not a lot of those guys out there.
Nope.
You know, and he's the right age. It's not, this is not like the John Lester discussion of several years ago where he's over
30. He's not
30. And you know,
he's 27.
He still has, you would think, 3, 4, 5 years of prime baseball ahead of him.
Oh, at least.
Well, right. Let's go to 32, 33, right?
At least.
So, you know, this is the kind of guy that I think the Red Sox should sign for that very reason. We brought him up. He's been a great player for us. He's helped us win a World Series. He's young enough to help us win many more World Series. He's never been a problem. He's never had any off-field issues.
No.
You know, if anything, the criticism of Betts is he's kind of boring. You know, he doesn't really wear his emotions on his sleeves.
Well,
he doesn't.
And he won't commit to us. Why does he want to go to market? Why doesn't he love us?
Yeah, and I completely dismiss that. I don't care about that because I think some guys are... you know, like Bogaerts, I think, was very comfortable being here,
mm-hmm.
and you know, sort of that fit with the Red Sox at the time. They were looking to sign somebody. Hey, he's willing to maybe take a few less dollars. That's not Betts, and you know what? More power to him. But to me, there's no replacing Mookie Betts.
No,
you know, I mean, you might get a couple of prospects that develop into good players, but that, you know, the level of player that Mookie Betts is, you're not going to see that again, I don't think, for many years.
It's,
and you've got him. He's here.
You've got him.
You know?
That's right. No, for me, right now, I said it's three guys in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
It's him, Bregman, and Trout.
Right.
I think those are the three. I really do. You know, and the next tier down might be, you know, Aaron Judge in a peak year or somebody like that. But
sure.
I just think that he's beyond special, and to move on from him would be
a
major mistake.
You know, I think he's somebody who's got the potential of winning a triple crown. Defensively, he's a great player. You know, as far as we know, he's a very good clubhouse guy.
He is.
And
teammates like him.
Yeah. So, anyway. We'll see what happens, but you can sign me up for keeping Mookie Betts here if you can.
So we agree.
We do agree on this.
How about that?
No, absolutely.
Well, that's good.
So the other decisions that the Red Sox may be facing, or the new GM may be facing, is, well, one of them is Rick Porcello, and it's not a huge, you know, franchise changing decision like Betts might be.
Sure.
But you know, Porcello did not have a very good year. He had a very good year a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's been some talk as of late in the last couple of days as well. Maybe you cut him. You can have him come back on a short money deal or something like that. But you know, I don't know. I think, and you brought this up earlier, and it's a very good point. You know, he'll probably do very well if he signed a National League team.
Yeah.
You know. You know. It's an easier lineup. Maybe you find a big park where you know, hold some home runs. And he's a stand-up guy. You've talked about him all year long, how, you know, he's somebody who's a professional and he puts the work in, and he talks about, you know, he's there to talk about when things don't go well. And that mentorship role, I think, goes a long way with the young staff.
Yeah, I think that he'd be a great signing for someone like, and I mentioned these guys before the podcast, somebody like the Braves. I think he'd be perfect for someone like the Braves. Mm-hmm. They've got Max Fried, Mike Soroka, Mike Foltynewicz. Young staff, contending team,
right.
Team that's already in the playoffs, type of guy who could mentor those guys through. They ended up having to go to Dallas Keuchel midseason this year.
Mm-hmm.
Porcello would not cost as much as Keuchel, not even close.
Right.
You give him some sort of 1 or 2 year deal with a club option for a third, something like that, and you hope that he finds it against some weaker competition in the National League. If I was the Red Sox, I generally think this way. The next GM or president of baseball ops for the Red Sox, you need to decide the two biggest, you need to resolve the two biggest issues on your roster, Betts and Martinez.
Yeah.
You'll know what's going to happen with Martinez within a week of the World Series ending, whether he opts in or opts out.
Yeah.
If he leaves, that's $22 million that you have to spend over the next 3 years. So you could be a little more active in free agency. You could be more inclined to keep Betts. Rick Porcello, Mookie Betts, Brock Holt, whatever. You're in those bids. You know, but once you decide what to do with Betts and with Martinez, I think the rest will fall into place a lot more easily.
Right.
If I was the Red Sox, I'd go to Porcello and I'd offer a more near deal, you know, some sort of club-laden incentive-based whatever. And say, you know, we love having you here. You're a great pro. You're going to fill out the rotation. If these other guys are healthy, you're going to give us your 175, 200 innings like you always do.
Right. 30 starts or whatever.
We're prepared to let the chips fall where they may. We still think we're going to be pretty good. But if you can find something better and you like it and you're happy with it.
Sure.
No hard feelings. You were a great person to have here, great clubhouse guy, whatever. We wish you the best, and when you come back, we'll give you a tribute video or something like that.
Right.
You know, but that's kind of where I would be with him. I'd offer him something like a 1 year deal, and if he takes it, wonderful. If not, you know, no hard feelings.
Right.
Best
right.
of luck.
Yeah, and I think something like that is all going to depend on who the suitors are. If there's a contending team that will give him the same deal or maybe a 2 year deal, I think he would take that in a heartbeat. If it's,
I would not offer him multiple years if I was the Red Sox,
right.
Which means if someone else comes in with 2 years or even a year with a club option or something like that, mm-hmm. then you could lose him.
Right. And you touched on J.D. Martinez. What's your reading of the tea leaves with him? He's kind of a hard guy to kind of to peg. Do you think he's he would opt out?
Here's the thing with JD, and it's really interesting to look at what his market would be if every team in the league could bid on him, as opposed to only the American League teams.
Right, good, because he's obviously,
because
you don't want him out in the outfield every day.
Scott Boras is on the radio the other day. It might have been satellite radio, might have been MLB radio. I don't recall. But I did hear his comments. He's on the radio the other day trying to pump Martinez's tires as an everyday outfielder, which is absolutely ridiculous. Right. For anyone who has watched the Red Sox over the last 2 years, Martinez cannot play 120, 130 games in the outfield. And it's not just because he's not good defensively. It's because his production at the plate suffers.
Mm-hmm.
You look at two stints this year where he was either held out or had to miss some time or was unavailable because he had back spasms,
right.
Lower back pain. After playing 6 or 7 days in a row in the outfield, he had a stretch at the end of August into September on the road trip when it was San Diego, Colorado, And the third trip was Anaheim. He was on the road. I think he played the outfield 7 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And the next 15, 20 games, he was awful at the plate.
Right.
And I don't think those things are coincidences. And Alex Cora sort of pulled the curtain back in July and said, we have to be careful playing JD in the outfield because when we do, his back tends to flare up.
Right.
And that's a major red flag for a guy who's on the wrong side of 30,
right,
who has a bigger body. He's a big, strong guy, physical guy. Can't be running around in left or right field 130, 140 games a year and still be that elite slugger that he is at the plate. So I think it'll be fascinating to see how Martinez and really Boris evaluate the market with only 15 teams to bid on him. And realistically, the only teams who are going to bid on him are going to be contenders.
Right.
So who's going to spend that money for him? Is it going to be Oakland? Is it going to be Tampa? Or are they going to try to leverage the Red Sox for maybe a one-year extension?
Hmm.
He maybe opts out. He signs for 4 years. He's already got three in his pocket.
Yeah.
In terms of real money, his average annual is $22 million, but next year he makes $23.75. The last 2 years of the deal, he makes $19.375, I think it is.
Right.
So maybe he tries to get himself a raise here.
Yeah. Yeah.
He opts out and he says, we can keep the same average annual, but it's 4 for $88 million, which in real money, he takes a pay cut next year, but the next three, he gets a raise.
Yeah,
he's gets more money out of it.
And he's got more security, too.
So it'll be real interesting to see what he does. If I had a gut feeling on this, if Betts is still in place by the end of the World Series, I think he opts in because I think he looks at Boston and he says, we can still win. I still like playing for Alex Cora. It's still a decent roster.
Right.
If they opt to move on Betts before the World Series is over, I think he opts out.
Right.
He's going to look at it and say, I'm in my early 30s. I want to play for a winner. That's why I came to Boston. I actually kind of like being in contention here.
Yep.
I'm going to go to a team that can win. And even if I have to take, maybe a little less average annual and I add a year onto my deal, let's say 4 for $80 million
right,
instead of 4 for $88 million,
right,
I'm still going to be in a place where I'm going to have a chance to play in October. So I could see him going either way. I would think that he's going to opt out. And I would think that that's probably not the decision I would make.
Hmm. Interesting. But I do agree that I think that what happens with Betts will have some impact on his decision if he knows.
It has to.
If he knows what that's going to be. Bill, here we are in October, and the Red Sox beat is slowly winding down. You had the breakup day earlier this week, and you will be transitioning to URI basketball, maybe some high school coverage, maybe some college football coverage. I'd like to always remind our listeners that just because baseball season ends doesn't mean you you have to deny yourself the dulcet tones of Bill Koch, because he and Kevin McNamara have a very good podcast that will be starting up in a few weeks, and that, of course, is the Pick and Pop College Basketball podcast, which focuses on the Rhode Island teams, URI, PC, a little bit of Brown, a little bit of Bryant as well. Bill, in preparation of that, how about a quick look at the URI and PC basketball programs this year? What do you make of them in a little two minute drill here?
I'll start with URI because those are the guys who I cover.
Yep.
I was down at practice on Tuesday, closed practice. Media was not allowed in.
Yep.
We watched a little bit through the windows at Keeney Gym.
When are they going to start letting you guys in?
Who knows?
Well, what were they doing in there that's so secretive?
Who knows? We'll see. For me, generally, I look at URI, and I'll just use the words of David Cox yesterday. He said, we feel like this roster can compete for Atlantic 10 championship and go back to the NCAA tournament.
Well,
and
that's a tall order.
That's
definitely
from the coach.
Yeah.
So I would take his word. He knows his players better than I do.
Yep.
I look at the roster, and I see two top 10 players in the Atlantic 10, Jeff Doughton and Cyril Langevin.
Yep.
I think that if those two guys play like top 10 players in the A-10 every night,
right,
they're going to have a chance to win a lot of games.
You've got the wild card with Fats Russell, right?
You return all five starters, Fats Russell, Tyrese Martin, and Jermaine Harris.
Yep.
The bench is largely rebuilt. Dana Tate is really the only guy that you're going to know there, sophomore forward.
Yep.
Everyone else is new, whether it be Antoine Walker is a transfer from Georgetown, two junior college transfers, Jeremy Shepard is a guard, and DJ Johnson is a forward. Mm-hmm. And then the three freshmen, Makai Long, Gregory Hammond, and Jacob Toppin. And, you know, realistically, the five starters, if they play a lot, you're probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah, you've got a veteran team down there.
What you would like to see is you'd like to see Doughton and Langevin be excellent.
Yep.
You have to shoot the ball better than you did last year. Mm-hmm. You have to be more consistent on defense than you were last year. And you have to take advantage of some of the opportunities on the schedule that you have. The non-conference is very tough.
Right.
For a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be strong enough to be considered for an at-large bid. When you have Providence, Alabama, Western Kentucky at home, Maryland, West Virginia, Middle Tennessee, Road, LSU on a neutral floor, it's an excellent schedule.
Right.
Very ambitious by David Cox. Very well put together.
Mm.
They should be able to accomplish their objectives if they win enough of those games, I would think. On the Providence side, I would defer to Kevin normally on that.
Sure.
But I, just from an outsider's view, I think they're going to be really good.
Yeah, I think the addition of Pipkins, the graduate transfer from UMass, gives them something they really needed, and that's a true point guard.
Luan Pipkins was a preseason first-team All-A-10 pick last year at UMass. Was on a bad team, not in a great situation. You know, I would say from the outside, from what I saw out of him, you know, might have played a little too selfishly the last 20-25 games when he realized, hey, this isn't going anywhere.
Yeah,
I'm just going to get mine, and you know, we'll worry about the rest.
Mm.
Average 6.5 assists per 40 minutes, which is pretty good.
Very good, yeah.
On a team that didn't really have a lot of talent
around
him.
There wasn't much around him, and that's the thing.
He will not take 19 shots per 40 minutes like he did last year.
Not in Providence.
That team was really hurt when A.J. Reeves went down early in the year. He was the only true shooter they had.
Mm.
They were really deficient from the perimeter. Otherwise, I think they have really interesting pieces, whether it be with David Duke, the Providence kid, you know, just long, rangy, you know, defense first guard. He'll be a lot better this year.
Mm-hmm.
Reeves, if he's healthy, you know, shows flashes of being an elite scorer.
And he looks good. He looks healthy.
Alpha Diallo is going to be one of the best players in the Big East.
Sure.
Nate Watson, I think, you know, I've always thought that Ed Cooley should just give him a little more rope and play him more.
Right.
Let him play 25 minutes. He's going to make his mistakes, but he's also going to get you like 16-9.
Yeah.
You know, and like Rhode Island, we'll see what Providence's other pieces can do. You know, can Jimmy Nichols progress at all? Can Chris Monroe progress at all? You know, those were two freshmen from last year. What's Greg Gant going to look like? Freshman forward from, I believe, North Carolina, who's very athletic. You know, type of guy who's going to bring you out of your seat.
Right.
You know, in the open court, or maybe if they throw him an alley-oop, you know, he's going to show you something.
Sure.
You know, and Providence, as always, you know, playing in the Big East, is going to have a good schedule. They're going to go to 20 league games next year when UConn comes back. So they're at a really interesting time right now. But I would expect that Providence is going to be picked somewhere in the middle of that league. And generally, the middle of that league, since it's reformed into the 10 they have now, has been an NCAA tournament contender.
Yeah.
So I would think, just looking at those two programs right now, that we're going to have a pretty good winter here.
Yeah, I
fully
so.
Expect that.
I think it could be a special season for PC, and I think URI could surprise people as well. So we'll be looking forward to the start of the college basketball season and the start, of course, of the Pick and Pop podcast in a few weeks. In the meantime, Bill, we can sit back and watch baseball playoff action without worrying about those cross-country trips like last year, right?
Who you got in the World Series?
I think the Dodgers go back.
Think so?
I think they go back because I think that, you know, they're just, you got to be pissed if you go 2 years in a row and you don't win, right?
And you lost it on your home field both times.
Yeah.
You had to watch Houston and the Red Sox celebrate in front of you at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah. And they're still a very good team. So I like the Dodgers. You know, my gut tells me the Astros are going to get there.
Mm.
Or my brain, I should say. Brain tells me that the Astros. My gut tells me that the Yankees are going to get there, you know, because
you're a Red Sox fan.
Because, you know,
the
anti-Yankee fan in me says, you know, they're going to do it again. But truly, the Yankees have had a phenomenal, phenomenal season, considering, you know, considering all the injuries they've had and Just it seemed the early part of the season, every week somebody major, you know, was going out. Stanton and
Judge missed a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Severino didn't pitch all year
for the most part, right? And yet they won, what did you tell me, 103 games or something like that?
103, 104 games.
Yeah, so, you know, so I think we may be seeing a Yankee. And, hey, Yankees-Dodgers, what's wrong with that, right?
No, it's two iconic brands in the sport.
Right.
You know, I really don't think that the Dodgers would have liked that result in the wild card game last night. I would have much rather played the Brewers.
Yeah, probably.
Than Washington.
Yeah.
They're going to roll out Patrick Corbin in game one. If they get Strasburg and Mad Max back in the series, you could have a hard time against them.
The Nats are a scary team, absolutely.
They have an atrocious bullpen.
Yeah, but
they're awful. but they're a very interesting team.
Yeah, you roll out Scherzer and Strasburg. And
I would much rather play the Brewers without Christian Yelich. It's a shame that he's hurt and had to miss.
Well, it's a testament to the Milwaukee that they still got there without him.
And had a great September.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Without him. I think they were 20-7. You know, so I think the Dodgers would have rather seen the Nationals. I still think, you know, like you, that they'll probably get through.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they will.
So we're not giving the Braves or the Cardinals any love here?
St. Louis, no. I think they're a little short in their lineup. Atlanta is a really interesting team. Another team, I don't know if I'm sold on the bullpen.
Yeah.
But the lineup is really good. They're so talented.
Yeah.
Ronald Acuña is such a good player. Mm-hmm. It's astonishing how good he is and how young he is. It's the National League version, a more athletic version of Devers. It's incredible how good he is.
Right.
In the AL, I have to think that Houston's going to get there. I don't like the fact that Carlos Correa is hurt again going into the playoffs.
Yep.
He's having back problems again. I'm not convinced that George Springer is fully healthy. From watching him play, I don't know if he's going to be able to carry them through.
Right.
Their pitching is outstanding. Garrett Cole was unbelievable this year. Should win the American League Cy Young in my mind.
They still have Verlander.
Still have Verlander, added Greinke.
Yeah.
It's the type of team that I feel like should get through.
Yeah, you look at that team, and health is obviously a big thing, and obviously that they're dealing with some of that. You look at that team, and your brain tells you this is the team that's going to go to the World Series. But, you know, we thought that last year, too.
Certainly did. That was the one series the Red Sox were not favored in.
Yeah.
They were favored over the Yankees. They were favored over the Dodgers. They were not favored against the Astros. And I thought they were in real trouble when they went to Houston 1-1. And they just sort of gritted their teeth and won the next three games.
Yep.
It was a phenomenal display of defiance by Boston, especially in game four.
Yep.
The 8-6 game, the diving catch by Andrew Benintendi. You could see them sort of gritting their teeth throughout that whole game. It was really fascinating to watch. Houston's motto all year has been take it back. That's been their hashtag all year. Take it back. Win the World Series again. I think they're firmly in their window. I think Garrett Cole leaves them as a free agent this offseason. Mm-hmm. I actually think he goes to the Yankees if they can iron out some of their personal issues between Cole and the team.
Mm-hmm.
Years and years ago, he was a first-round draft pick by New York out of high school, did not sign.
Right.
There were some ruffled feathers there. He ended up going to UCLA and, afterwards was picked. I think he went 1-1 to the Pirates.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can get over those roadblocks and money has a way of sort of soothing those, I think the Yankees not trading for a starter, not bringing in a big money starter was, all sort of a long-term look at Garrett Cole and Luis Severino at the top of that rotation, which would be pretty darn tough to beat.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see Houston and the Dodgers. It's going to be a rematch of 2017, and I think Houston will get them again. I won't say how many games. I would have to guess it's not going to be something quick. You'd probably say Houston in six.
Mm.
They have home field. They were really tough to beat at home this year. I think they were 60-21.
Right.
Had one of the best home field advantages in all of baseball. And I just think that eventually they'll have a little too much for just about anyone they run into.
Sure. Well, whatever it is, I think that it promises to be a great World Series. I think that
playoffs are off to a great start already.
Yeah, absolutely. Great game last night with the Nats and Brewers. The A's and Rays get going in a little while here tonight. Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, Yankees, Nats. I mean, you name it. It's there's a lot of possibilities for what could be a great World Series. So, Bill, I might have spoken too soon at the top here when I called this the season finale. Yes, it is a season finale, but you know, sometimes TV shows or series have to come back for one more thing to whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we may have to do a post season finale episode, depending on if there's some big news that comes out of Boston, like, you know, they name a GM that really make, you know, if it's just some guy, you know, I don't know. I think I'd rather just watch basketball, but or some woman. Yeah. Well, if they do a woman, we're definitely going to get back and talk about it, because that would be groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if it's, you know, if it's worthy, then maybe we get back together and talk about who the Red Sox brought in and why. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge as we come to it. Bill, it's been fun again. Unfortunately, the season didn't end like last season did. But
no.
I think we did have another very solid year on the Twin Bills. And I appreciate all of your wisdom and your encyclopedic knowledge.
Wow.
Yeah. And I especially like it, like on days like today when I'm coughing a lot, I can just let you talk a lot.
Wow. I mean, I don't know what to say to that. That's too much billing for me. But Bill, I also I appreciate the folks who listen to this. And, you know, like I say to my dad and my brother all the time, you know, this podcast is sort of, for me, it's an outlet for a lot of things that I either can't or don't put into print.
Yeah.
It's a lot more opinion-based. It's a lot more of my
sure.
takes on the team, I guess you could say.
Yep.
You know, in print, you sort of try to play it a little straight.
Well, right. You're there covering the game, and you're reporting on the game, and you're reporting, you're giving us a notebook, short items that from accessibility and stuff. Although I have to say, this year, I think it's been refreshing that you have broken out and done a few columns and let us sort of peek into the Bill Koch way of looking at things. And I think that's very welcome.
There will be more
by
of
our
that
readers, and I think
next
yeah,
year.
Sure, you know.
There will be.
I mean, if a team is going great and winning all the time, in some ways it's kind of boring. But when they are failing or they're not living up to expectations and there are all these decisions to make, then people with opinions, you know, I think become, I think people want to hear what those opinions are, you know. So. Anyway.
At least you might.
Us and our thousands of listeners on the Twin Bills.
Let's hope.
Bill, again, thanks so much. And who knows? We may do this again before the snow starts to fall.
All right, Bill.